coming up this week on the Wells Tech Podcast. It's all about boundaries. Sally and I continue our discussion about the book, The Church of Facebook, Creating Boundaries in Facebook, and all things privacy. All coming up next. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with episode 218 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, January 11th, 2012. And joining me in the new year is, again, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you this morning?
I cannot complain. How are you?
I could complain a little. I'm hearing about every third word you're saying, so this should be an interesting podcast.
I'm lucky if every third word I'm saying is worth listening to. So we'll do the best that we can, Sally. We are discussing The Church of Facebook, a book that we've been reading together, and we're up to chapter 4, I believe, yes?
That's correct, although this is probably my first official Kindle book, and it's kind of hard to have perspective of where we are in the book. That's been an interesting experience. We should do a show about Kindle book reading.
I thought you got the paperback version.
Nope, I'm electronic. This time.
And I'm reading it on Kindle. Actually, I'm not I go back and forth. So I've got the audiobook as well, which is what I did for this one, which is kind of nice if you're taking notes. So you're just listening and taking notes. I like that format. So, plus on my phone with Audible, you can actually speed up the narration. So I was actually listening to it in double time. But that's also nice too for reference work.
So anyway, it's like a chipmunk kind of version or something.
No, it's actually pretty smooth. They do a nice job of it. I like it. This chapter is called Illumination. And there's a ton of stuff in this chapter. And maybe we should start with kind of the illustration that Jesse started with in the book. And that is of a man named Virgil, who was blind but ultimately received his sight back through, I don't remember what it was surgery or what it was, but
I think he had cataracts removed.
Right, that's right.
And after 45 years.
Right, for 45 years he couldn't see, and now he could see again. And all of the sights that he was not used to seeing were were almost overwhelming. So that he found it hard to focus, and he was attracted to colorful things. He mentioned, yellow school buses were always drawing his attention, and it was difficult to focus on faces and very difficult to adjust to.
And I think one of the main reasons he brought out this story was that this man had no perception of the visual
world
around him.
Right.
He had been blind all this time, and so it was hard for him to adjust, as he had never learned what it was like to see mm-hmm. things. And then drawing from that story the parallel to our adjustment to the Facebook world that mm-hmm. we live in now.
Which takes some getting used to, and it can be blurry for some people. We're going to hear an interview here, and this chapter is really timely to our interview with Professor and Pastor Alan Sigelko, who talked a lot about boundaries. And that's really what this chapter is about. Before Facebook, the boundaries and contexts of our relationships were a lot clearer. Some relationships we have were here, others were over there. People that you work with were in this category. Your family was in this category, and you related to them a little bit differently. And your friends were over into this category, and you related to them and dealt with them and communicated with them a little bit differently than you dealt with your family or your coworkers. What Facebook has done is thrown all of those people almost together, so that as you communicate via Facebook, you're almost treating them all the same, and that's an issue.
Okay, so yeah, what we're talking about here is a blurry world that we're in. Facebook has blurred those lines. One quote that I highlighted in my book was that our technology collapses spatial boundaries and social contexts, and it blurs the social roles and brings audiences together who might not normally be co-present. So when I open up my Facebook, I see high school friends from however many years ago that was. We won't talk about those years. And I see, you know, my coworkers, and I see my congregation members, you know. So it's a real mixture of friends. And he goes into a lot of discussion about what friends really are.
Mm-hmm. He used the term blurring nature of hyperconnection. And then he went into basically three different types of boundaries that we kind of have to readjust our thinking around. The first one is privacy, and he talked about three different arenas of privacy. The workplace, three different examples, I guess. The workplace, classroom, and home. And when you're getting into the area of privacy, he used illustrations of, let's say, in the workplace, friending your boss or friending somebody that works for you and some of the ramifications of that, where that can lead to, yeah, greater knowledge and kind of a better social relationship, but can also go down a road where you're sharing things that, you know, may get you into trouble. The same with a student and a teacher. That's been a big issue, and I've done a lot of reading on that. Should a teacher friend a student? In fact, in some states, there's legislation to say you can't do that, at least in a public school setting. And even in the home setting, should a parent friend a child or a child friend a parent? And even though there are good privacy settings, I shouldn't maybe necessarily use the word good, extensive privacy settings on Facebook, it requires a lot of vigilance, and it can be hard to figure out who you're sharing with. And the assumption that Jesse makes in the book is that you really just have to assume that everything you put on Facebook is ultimately going to be public, regardless of how private you think it is.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And, you know, one thing is, you can spend a lot of time working on those privacy settings and put a lot of trust into them, and then things change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it, like you said, a lot of vigilance, a lot of continual checking of that if you think you're going to be relying on that for safety. So, you know, I like to err on the side of, you know, if I put it on the web, I have to assume that it's going to be archived and it's going to be shared and it's going to be passed along somehow. And so ultimately, whatever I put out there is public knowledge for today and for 10 years from now or whatever, public knowledge for a future spouse to read or a future employer to read or whatever it may be.
Right. Yeah, the fact that this is going to be around for a long, long time should go into your thinking before you post. The next boundary that he describes is the peer relationships and then subsequently potentially the romantic relationships that result. And here he's really talking about the definition of what a friend means. Friends, he makes the point, friends mean something different on Facebook now. A friend used to be somebody very close that you could share a lot of different things with, very, very private things. But Facebook has kind of redefined that word friend.
Yeah, I think you and I have probably both seen this kind of thing play out on the Facebook arena, where you see people getting into relationships or people that have 2,000 friends, you know, and you wonder, wow, how is that possible? Some people are just kind of on a quest to see how many friends they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess I'm probably guilty as well. There are probably people on my friend list that I've never really met face-to-face or really don't know exactly who they are, you know, except they're loosely connected maybe with a podcast listener or something like that, you know, that I've seen their name float around or
right.
something.
What was really interesting, and I'll put you on the spot here in a minute, Sally, since you have the Kindle version and I listen to the audio version, I wanted to maybe read for our listeners that whole Jennifer-Amy relationship scenario, because the illustration of that scenario suggests that there are entire relationships that are born, lived, and killed entirely in a virtual world. And that's what Facebook is. And we all kind of have a front row view of how relationships are played out when people get into relationships or fall out of relationships, divorces happening. You know, that's the, you know, there's something neat about being involved in another person, a friend's life especially, but there's also the bad side of that. Do you happen to have that section?
I'm so there.
You know it's what I'm talking about?
I do. It's,
why don't you give it a quick read?
A humorous depiction of Facebook. It came from Chicago Tribune's comedy website, Head Candy, and it's entitled A Modern Day Romance. And just a snapshot of Facebook news feeds or streams. The first panel read, Kevin and Jennifer are in a relationship. And, you know, you see them going back and forth. Jennifer wrote on Kevin's wall, Hey, boo, I love you. And Kevin,
I'm glad you're reading this,
back
not me.
With a dedicated song, Mariah Carey's Always Be My Baby. And, you know, so there was definitely this flirtatious back and forth on each other's wall. Then it says a short while later, we read that Amy friended Kevin. And after a few pictures show up on Kevin's Facebook profile showing him at Amy's birthday party, Jennifer wrote, Who the heck is Amy? And then the next panel shows Kevin sending Jennifer a piece of flair. And it said something like, Whoa, it's not what you think, honey. Before long, Jennifer had joined the group 1 million strong against that conniving witch army. So,
witch
you
Amy,
know, things
yes.
went downhill, and Kevin is now listed as single.
So. Just all within the space of, you know, whatever. That's amazing to me. And the numbers are astounding of the people that meet online, but I think the numbers would also astound us of some of the relationships, solid relationships maybe, that have been broken up because of this thing called Facebook and social networks.
Absolutely. I just, you know, think about what a hard time that is to grow up and to go through relationship issues and stuff as you're maturing and everything. And, you know, back in the day, that was a hard thing for us as teens and 20-somethings or whatever. And then to do it in this whole public stage of mm-hmm. Facebook now, it's a whole new dimension to it.
Yeah. And he references Proverbs 18:24 at this point as a definition, a great definition of a friend. And, you know, the whole concept that a friend sticks closer than a brother. And he makes the point that the human heart really knows what the true definition of a friend is. But social media and all the pressures around it kind of blur that and make it difficult to truly define who those friends are, who God has placed into your life to be the friends that the Bible speaks about.
And then finally, there was one other area of boundary that he talked about in terms of Facebook, and that's time management and personal identity. When I first read that title, I thought, well, that's two kind of different ideas mm-hmm. to throw into one. But as I read, I understood. First of all, in terms of time management, he harkens back to something he's talked about before, and that we're always connected, the hyper-connected
right.
concept, the tethered self, he mm-hmm. calls it, where we have our device with us at all times. And you know, he talks about surfing via an iPhone or something like that, and how that's just going to become more and more the norm. It's not just going to be the smartphones that a few people have, but mm-hmm. everything that we have is going to keep us highly connected to each other through the internet.
Right. He talks about, he calls us high-tech turtles. With our homes on our backs going everywhere with us, and basically that home being our mobile devices, where we have text messaging and we have email and we have Facebook, and we can't go anywhere without our home. We're always on, he says, always on us, which basically means we're always distracted. And I think all of us have seen it. We've seen families sitting around, you know, the table at the restaurant, and three of the four of them, or if not all four of them, are you know, looking down at their phones, either texting or checking email or whatever, just totally disconnected, even though they're in the same place at the same time.
That wouldn't be the Spriggs family, no, by any chance.
Usually not.
Okay. Unfortunately,
we try not
it might
to,
be the Draper family.
I can't say 100% of the time, but usually not all of us at the same time, and we give each other a hard time for that, too. So,
you know, as I'm reading this, though, I'm feeling guilt pains, not just mm-hmm. for being at the restaurant, but there have been times when I'm sitting in church when I think, oh, I'd love to pull out my device right mm-hmm. now and tweet this or take a picture or whatever it might be, you
right.
know, share the moment.
Right.
And I seriously have to fight that urge, you know, to do that.
Right.
So understand.
Another part of this conversation is he says the always on mentality makes us believe we have an invisible entourage. And that's true. That's one of the, I think the things that makes Facebook so popular is that you have an audience, somebody who wants to listen to what you have to say. And then he transitions that into, you know, our children. As they're growing up, they're tethered from the beginning, and younger kids are getting cell phones with internet and texting and whatever. And what has happened is that these children become too fully dependent on the opinion of other friends. So they're constantly living in Facebook, and they're polling their friends, they're seeing what their friends' opinions are, and they haven't or won't learn about independence and the ability to make independent decisions without that entourage, that mix of friends, some close, some not, some providing good advice, some not.
Yeah, I liked one particular quote. It said, what's not being cultivated is the ability to be alone, to reflect on and contain one's emotions. Mm-hmm. So instead of sharing everything with the world and polling the world for their opinion on what color your hair should be, mm-hmm. you know, actually contemplating being alone, making your own decisions, being our authentic selves.
Yeah, he used that phrase a number of times, being our authentic selves. Really, asking God, you know, God's opinion is the one that counts. Asking God, who should I be? Who have you made me? What should I be doing in your name? And then he ends with another quote. How do we make sense of ourselves in a world where we are distracted by so many colorful, fast-moving objects, especially when many of those objects are very good? And that's really the question for a Christian on Facebook. And maybe one of the big points of the book is how do we treat this thing? Do we ignore it? Do we say stay away from it? Or do we learn to deal with it and kind of turn that blurry picture into something clearer for the sake of the gospel? And I think it's really kind of the crux of the question, right?
Absolutely. So time to read on to chapter 5. We'll hit that one again next month, and I'll be anxious to see what Jesse has to share with us there.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, we had a chance to sit down with Pastor and Professor Alan Siegelkow, counselor Alan Siegelkow as well, with Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service. For many years was a seminary professor and a parish pastor. And he has some neat insights on his experiences in dealing with this thing called social networks and internet addictions in general. And he's part of a task force that is studying this. So he talks a lot about these boundaries that came up in the book as well. So let's listen to our interview with Pastor Alan Siegelkow. Joining us today is Pastor Professor Alan Siegelkow. Good morning, Alan. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Alan, you are the chairman of the Commission on Mental Health Needs, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to chat with you. Sally and I are going through a book called The Church of Facebook and talking about all the issues surrounding social networks, and I know that is a big part of what you do in your capacity in this mental health area. So maybe before we jump into questions related to that, you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background.
Well, I was a pastor in the Wisconsin Synod for 22 years. I served two congregations in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area, and a congregation on the south side of Milwaukee. And then I was called to Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, and served there teaching pastoral counseling for 21 years. And now the last year and a half or so, I've been working as a counselor, therapist at Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service, Christian Family Counseling. I've got a, besides my divinity degrees, I've got a master's in social work, clinical counseling. So I've been able to serve and help people in that way. So that's pretty much my background.
Okay. So let's jump into some specific questions about, we can maybe start with Facebook and those sites like it. Facebook obviously is something that almost everybody is familiar with. If they haven't used it, they certainly know people who do use it. It's obviously an easy way to interact and connect. Just what have been your observations of this whole Facebook and social networking phenomenon, and maybe more importantly, its effect on personal relationships?
Well, they've been positive and negative.
Okay.
A lot of people with, in the positive side, a lot of people with all varying levels of social anxiety issues where it's very difficult for them to talk in a group or they feel very uncomfortable talking with people face-to-face. They seem to just blossom on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And here's where they can really improve their social networking and their conversations and their interest in people, which has always been there. They just haven't been able to overcome their anxieties in connection with talking with people face-to-face. And they don't have that problem using Facebook. And it's really been helpful for them. I think that's the positive thing. And just getting information out.
What is it maybe about a tool like Facebook that, what barrier does that take away? Is it, it's certainly not the anonymity because you have to say who you are. Is it just time to think about what you want to say or pick and choose your social gatherings?
Well, I think both of the latter. You can pick and choose who you want to talk to. You can set your own boundaries. You can participate in a certain conversation or not, but it's an anxiety. It's that the person has that I don't know what to say. I don't quite know how it's going to be heard. And what you said about giving a person a little bit more time to think, in some cases that's true, but in other cases on Facebook, and that's getting into the negative, people do respond much more quickly, perhaps, than they should,
right,
because they don't respect the boundaries that right. are important.
Right. It's too easy.
Yeah. And I think as Christians, we want to make sure that we are wise about our sharing online. And perhaps you have some tips or stories or whatever that you could share with us to demonstrate what would be appropriate sharing on social media sites.
Well, I guess just to follow up on the negative side, it's where the boundaries are not respected and where just Christian decency in connection with the Eighth Commandment that deals with gossip and things like that are just not respected, that people get into trouble in connection with Facebook in many different ways. I think that if we always remember the purpose for, as I understand it, for Facebook was to allow people to connect with a lot more people than they could. Because if you have 300 friends on Facebook, you really have a social network that can keep you occupied and get you involved with a lot of people. It's not the traditional face-to-face thing, and it's not the spontaneous, perhaps, and yet in other ways it may be more spontaneous for the person who's got the anxiety problem with face-to-face issues. So there's helpful things there. In the negative area, counseling people, thousands of dollars on their phone bill because they got involved with chat rooms that got them into tremendous trouble, and many that turn into sexual issues mm-hmm. where they're going against, you know, God's word in connection with the Sixth Commandment and pretty much destroying the trust in their marriage. Husband's writing out the phone bill and discovers that his wife has got $6,000 in chat room things with European sites and Asian sites and so forth. And you know, all of a sudden, where's the trust in marriage? Or the husband sees that there's all of this stuff on the phone bill and all of these numbers and confronts the wife and finds out that in her loneliness, because he's not around very much, the husband isn't around very much, she's been contacting some old boyfriends, mm-hmm. and love interests, and you know that just takes the trust out of marriage. And,
right.
And in those cases, people need some help and some counseling. They haven't respected the boundaries that should be there.
I assume it just because it's so easy to do, and they have time on their hands. Do you see that people are addicted to using Facebook? I mean, I look at some teens today, and they live there. Is that an issue you're having to deal with too on a counseling level? Just a raw addiction to the tool?
What I've seen mostly, and I know there are therapists who have seen, maybe I should start this way. The word addiction is got a common meaning, and then it's got a more technical, mm-hmm. empirical meaning. And but in the common meaning, yes, when you're in a group and you should be communicating face-to-face and you're texting mm-hmm. on your phone, and I see a lot of teenagers doing that.
Right. I see a lot of adults doing that.
Yeah. It's for an old man like me, it's very rude.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I like to look people in the eye and talk with them and so forth, and I really get a lot of joy out of that. I get less joy out of doing things in a social media thing. But I'm not. It's generational.
Mm-hmm.
There's a generational thing here that we need to respect, and those of us who are older and need to see that there are advantages to it as well as disadvantages, and we need to recognize both the advantages and the disadvantages and use it as a tool that God has given to us in our society. In every tool that we have in society, God, you know, Satan comes along and devises ways that it can be abused. So
I think that's a great lead into my next question, Pastor, is from a private or personal ministry perspective as well as a public ministry perspective, do you see ways that these kind of social media tools can enhance relationships and give glory to God at the same time?
Yes. The concept of Christian sister to sister, brother to sister, counseling or peer help or accountability or encouragement. I mean, it just broadens the horizon in the whole concept of Christian encouragement being offered to another Christian who's in crisis or is in trouble or who's reaching out or who needs comfort and needs support. I was at a funeral yesterday, and the family's really torn up. The death was expected, and yet it's still a shock. And think about the comfort that someone 600 miles away could give through a little bit more extended conversations through social media that are really reasonable in cost. It is just a remarkable tool in that way.
Alan, we know that you serve as chairman of the Mental Health Needs Committee. You're also involved in a project through Well Special Ministries addressing internet abuse and social media issues. Can you tell us a little bit about the committee's work, why it was formed, and some of the things that you're looking at?
It goes back a long ways in our vision connected with it. We worked in connection with internet abuse and technology abuse with presentations at our worker training schools, and developed a procedure at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary of a three-pronged process, really, of students who feel that they have some problems in this area would form a peer accountability or encouragement group, and if they need further help, would seek the help of a psychologist, and it would all be in that first and second stage anonymous. Mm-hmm. The seminary would pay the cost, but the student would receive the help without the seminary knowing the student's name. And then if it becomes more difficult and to overcome, then the accountability students and the student and the psychologist with the troubled student's permission reported to the seminary, and then there's a policy where the student receives even more help and more work on the issues, so that boundaries are, he can learn how to respect boundaries. Mm-hmm. In connection with his use of media.
Sure.
So that's where it started, and then now it's in the area of let's move what we've learned and what we've what our research has shown, and we've got a fantastic committee, and the chairman is Dr. Brandon Hayes of Christian Family Counseling, Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service, and we're really working in several different ways. We want to have a website that will address the children and parents and teens and college students and adults, and we want to do three things. We want to provide, I guess the simplest word is warnings about boundaries. We want to provide those warnings, and then we want to have sites and suggestions and scriptural help for the individual, as the individual might seek help for himself or herself. And then the third area is the area of how can I help my friend? How can I help my child? How can I help my spouse? How can I help my brother or my sister? Mm-hmm. In connection with social media and their possible abuse of it.
Mm-hmm. Since you spent many years at the seminary, do you think that the graduates today of Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary are better equipped or equipped at all to deal with some of these emerging issues around internet abuse and social media issues in their parish when they get there and have to deal with these issues, certainly that maybe weren't issues 10, 15 years ago?
Well, yes, I guess it's kind of an obvious answer. As culture changes, those who grow up generationally in that culture will recognize the opportunity and the abuse. Mm-hmm. Of the cultural change much more readily than the old fogies. Can I use that term?
Right.
Like me, who are seeing it a little bit more from the outside. Mm-hmm. And don't quite know the temptation that the younger pastors do. So that's one area. But, yes, our training is better. We have special sessions with the incoming students. There's training at Dr. Martin Luther or Martin Luther College that mm-hmm. is much more effective than it has been in the past, and
great.
is in the process of being improved. And then at the prep schools too, they're also dealing with the issues, but they're dealing it more with as if children, mm-hmm. Not with adults.
Right.
And so there's approach things and mm-hmm. and how you work on things, and parents need to be much more involved there. And the warning to parents And this is one thing that we're hoping that our work on the website can be useful, is various sites and various ideas for parents on how to really set boundaries in their home for the use of social media, because it is an important tool, and it is a useful tool in society. Children really need to know how to use it, but they need to know how to use it in a way that respects their Lord, their Christian faith, their family, and their Christian brothers and sisters.
I suppose it's like anything else that presents itself in our society. You can't ignore it, but God has an intended use for it, and also, as you mentioned quite frequently, boundaries that need to be set around its use. So
yes.
I think that's a message that needs to be loud and clear, too. And God has something to say about all that we do. So very good. Alan, we really appreciate you taking the time today, and we wish you rich blessings on your work, and we pray that the results of that are a blessing to the Synod as well. Thanks again for your time.
You're welcome, and thanks for the privilege, and God's blessings to the two of you.
Thank you.
Appreciated the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for your time. There are, you know, so many directions you could go with this, and I think counselors have a heavy load coming up as they're trying to deal with not just another addiction, but something that that almost everybody has to deal with.
Yeah, I like that Pastor Siegelko had positive things to say as well, and
mm-hmm.
that there are
Absolutely.
Ways that we can use social media to encourage and to comfort and to offer support. And so as Christians, I think those are the things we need to seek out as we make use of these
mm-hmm.
tools.
Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Pastor Siegelko. Let's move on to ministry resources, Sally. You have something that you have some firsthand experience with.
I do. I wanted to make mention of a podcast I listened to recently. It's called Online Outreach Mindset for Churches from the Internet Toolbox for Churches. And this is a fairly new podcast, and I'm not real sure about the person behind it or, you know, what his goals are with what he's doing with the podcast. But this particular one talked about his experience as he moved to a new city and looked for a church. So it's very, firsthand experience stuff, and that he found that a lot of churches didn't have great information out on the web to help him make a decision about which churches to visit. So something we're constantly striving for with our church and school websites is to have them available for potential visitors to our congregation. And one thing that he zeroed in on, and this is just one area that we should be aware of, is the fact that we have a listing, whether we know it or not, in something called Google Places.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably all seen this if you use Google Maps at all, and you Google a particular location, some information about that location will pop up. So if it's the Mall of America, say, then there'll be an extra page that pops up that you can read about the mall hours, see photos of the mall, read reviews of the mall, different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of Google Places exist for our churches and schools as well. And in this podcast, he tells us exactly how to kind of take ownership of Google Places. And so I actually did that. I followed his instructions, and I'll probably be able to post a few links in the show notes to help you get started as well. But you might want to listen to the podcast too. But basically, you go to your Google Place and you claim ownership, and they do that by actually physically mailing you or faxing you a PIN number. So you can't just say, I own this place,
right,
and then have it sent to a different location.
It needs to be some kind of real verification, right?
Exactly. And so I did that in December, and I received my PIN number via mail within about 1.5 weeks, I think. It didn't take very long,
mm-hmm.
but I got some official Google mail. Made me feel good to see Google on the envelope. And with that PIN number, then I was able to control the content that displays on our Google Places listing for our congregation here in Sleepy Eye. So I could add the website. I could add our church times. I could add a link to, you know, special projects or YouTube videos or images that I wanted displayed when you go to Google Places for St. John's and Sleepy Eye.
Your own little Places promotion page.
Exactly. And so I actually took a screenshot and share that in the show notes or a link off the show notes to what it looks like as you're filling out that form, the different things you have access to. There's even kind of a free form area where you could say whatever category and then give information about it, like parking, handicap spaces available, or broadcast and put your time that you're on the local television station. So it's kind of your own customization area for your Google Places listing as well. And so worth taking the time to do. It wasn't real difficult or anything, but just something I wasn't aware of before. So I thank the Internet Toolbox for Churches podcast for making me aware.
Mm-hmm. That sounds almost like your pick, but you actually have another pick. So why don't we jump to picks of the week and just keep on rolling, Sally.
Keep on going. Got the audio thing under control here, so I'm going to keep at it. I do have a pick, and it is mypermissions.org. Mm-hmm. This is something I read about recently.
Yeah.
Where you can easily check out the privacy settings and applications in particular that you've given access to your different social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So with one click, you are taken directly to your settings and applications that have access to them. And Facebook, Twitter, Dropbox, LinkedIn, Instagram, Google, Flickr, and Yahoo are all listed here. You don't have to give any information to mypermissions.org. Instead, they just make use of the fact that you're typically logged in on those sites, or else they prompt you to log in on those particular sites and direct you to the correct page in the myriad of privacy settings that will bring up your app's permissions on those particular sites. And this means things like things you may not be aware of that you've given permission to access your profile and the friend information you have. You might want to just tighten up those controls. Mm-hmm. So I looked, and yes, I did have something like Made in Mississippi as an app on my Facebook page. And I was like, gee, I don't think they need access to all my friends.
I'm not going to ask.
All the information that's available. And so, you know, you might be surprised what some of the apps are that have access to basically what you think is privatized information on your Facebook profile or your Twitter profile or your Instagram account or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Worth taking a look at. Maybe even once a month you want to tag this page and come back to it and just triple check the application access to your different accounts.
Yeah, and it works just like an index as far as I can tell. It's just a link that gets you right into the control panel, the privacy control panels of these different tools. So, cool. Worth the effort. Absolutely. Great pick. And ties in actually pretty nicely with my pick because my pick actually relies on those permission givings that you provide to these different services to talk to one another. My pick is IFTT, I-F-T-T-T, stands for if, then, well, wait a minute.
If this, then that. There you go.
And a very Spartan website, but very powerful. Basically, what it allows you to do is it connects Web 2.0 tools and really more than that. So let me give you an example. You can connect your Gmail to an SMS service, which would allow you to say, whenever I get an email from so-and-so, send me a text message. You can connect a weather service to your email. So if it's going to rain tomorrow, so you go to weather.com. If weather.com says it's going to rain tomorrow, then email me the weather report. Or if it's the first day of the month, then call me with a particular message. Or if I star an item in Google Reader, then send the article to Evernote or Google Docs or whatever. So you can build these recipes, and it's really kind of a simple programming interface. You say, if this happens, If I star an item in Google Reader, then do that. And that's really as easy as it is. There's all kinds of services you can connect. You can connect Twitter and Facebook and Google Reader. You can connect voicemail, email. The list really goes on and on. Weather reports, blogs. So if somebody posts a certain blog, all email, all kinds of email clients. Just a really simple concept that can be a nice productivity boost. And then there's all kinds of recipes that other people have created that you can actually leverage and use as your own if they make sense for you. So it's worth a try. Sally, you've seen this before too, right?
I have. I think we actually talked about it on the show maybe way back in April.
I did a search. I never saw it in the show notes, so okay. Nobody picked
Very good.
It at least. So.
But I had seen it when it was in beta earlier in 2011 and played with it some then, but I really didn't go to the trouble. I was really excited because it has Instagram, and I'm just a huge Instagram girl these days.
Right.
And so now I can make all my Instagram pictures go directly to Flickr. So my Flickr account is kind of a backup of my Instagram pictures, which is pretty much my primary camera application these days. So I was excited about that.
So you can say, just very simple things like if I'm tagging a photo on Facebook, email me or text me or something like that. And you've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email, weather. Let me see what some of these other channels are here. I mentioned Evernote. Digo is part of this. Craigslist. So you could say, well, if such and such shows up on Craigslist, email me. Flickr, Google Talk, LinkedIn, Pinboard, Vimeo, Tumblr, YouTube, WordPress, all kinds of good stuff. So worth a look. It's all free, and I think it works pretty well.
You know, I have to laugh and appreciate their design as well. You said it's a pretty sparse website.
Yeah.
They use some really huge icons.
They do.
So they make it, like, super simple.
That's right. For the visually impaired, they'd have no problem here either, yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, fun little interface. And I set up the messaging to my phone, and it totally works. And so I'm real impressed.
Okay. Let's skip quickly ahead to a new feature that we're going to be introducing on the first episode of each month, and we call it our 7 Best. And the concept here is Sally and I would like to put together a list of the 7 best of something each month. And we need your help in doing that. We'd like you to submit nominees for the 7 best. We'll look at all of the suggestions. We'll do our own research, and we will look at your suggestions for the 7 best whatevers. And you don't have to list. You don't have to send us 7. You can suggest 1. And we're going to take a different topic each month. So by the year's end, maybe we'll slip over into 2013 to get a full 12. But maybe we only do it for 7 times. I don't know. But the 7 best digital Bible study tools is up for February. So if you have a favorite Bible study tool, it can be an online Bible, it can be a Bible research tool, an index, a list, whatever.
A mobile app?
Yeah, a mobile app could be anything. Let us know about it, because I'm sure between Sal and I, we don't have a corner on the best Bible study tools. So we need your help to put together a list of the 7 best. And by the time we're all done, we'll hopefully have the best of, and it'll be a real useful resource. So let us know that through any kind of the social media tools that we have available. We have Twitter, Facebook, Google+, comment on the show notes, send us a voicemail, comment on the listserv, all kinds of ways to do that. Just look at wellstech.wells.net, email us, wellstech@wells.net. All kinds of ways to get in touch with us with your nominee for one of the 7 best digital Bible study tools.
Time for some community feedback,
I bet.
It
is. Fire when ready.
First up, we heard from Dave Hepp, who sent us a really fun idea. I really like this. Dave sent us a cartoon first that talked about insufficient password. Your password must be at least mm-hmm. 8 characters. It must include upper and lowercase letters, and it must be incomprehensible gibberish that you'll never actually be able to remember. Mm-hmm. And that makes up a great password, sure. apparently. So a cartoon, but very, very true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all deal with this, and many, many of the systems that we need to access are password protected. And Dave's idea was that he's using a biblical phrase or an uplifting phrase in some format, you know, to make up his password. So maybe you have a favorite
That's
Bible
a great
verse.
Idea. I like that.
Or, you know, a phrase from a hymn or whatever it might be. And you could use an acronym for that or introduce some numbers and upper and lowercase characters to it or whatever and make that your password so that every time you type it, you can be reminded of God's love for you and the grace that you live under.
Mm-hmm. Great idea. Thank you.
Yep. Next up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal. He sent us a link to an internet safety site, a compilation, 16 of the best internet safety sites for kids. And this is from iLearn Technology. You'll want to check this out if you haven't been here yet. It has a lot of cool sites. Starts off with NetSmarts Kids, which I was familiar mm-hmm. with, but includes Disney's Surfswell Island, a privacy playground site, Safety Land, Safe Surfing with Dongle, I Keep Safe, and it goes on and on and on. There's a Garfield safety site. So if you're looking to teach internet safety to kids, I think there's lots of great resources out there, so mm-hmm. check out this link.
Great.
Next up, we heard from Principal Paul Patterson, who is at Peace in Sun Prairie. Hello, Sun Prairie. That's where we bickered. Mm-hmm. And he sent us a link to a deal from InfoCorps on the Starboard, which is an interactive whiteboard that attaches somehow to your existing dry erase board.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's a great deal going on right now from InfoCorps for the Starboard setup as well as software to go along with it. So
yeah, from what I can tell, it's a smart board competitor, but it is a little device that you just pin up to the top of the whiteboard, and you still need a projector to project onto the whiteboard, but then it calibrates. And the price of this is very appealing. It's like under $200 for this thing, so... For this special, at least.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, we can have a link in the show notes to InfoCorps website mm-hmm. if you're interested in more details. And then we had some audio feedback, Martin. I'm always excited when we get a voicemail. It's especially fun to try and read Google's translation of it.
Oh, but yes.
We heard from Teacher Kurt Gostick, who is at St. Lucas in Keewaskum. And our listeners may remember that Kirk was on our show back in September of 2011, when the school year kicked off, he shared with us their one-to-one computing initiative at St. Lucas. The third and fourth grade classroom all got netbooks this year. And so mm-hmm. Kurt called in with an update on how things have been going as they've progressed through the school year.
Yeah, and just a little preface to this. He sent us two voicemails since our Google Voice voicemail clipped him. So these are both rather long. So we're going to actually save the second one for our classroom technology segment when he talks about flipping a classroom. So you'll have to stay tuned for that one. But here's the first part of his voicemail.
Hi, Martin and Sally. God's blessings on the new year. This is Kurt Gostick from St. Lucas Lutheran checking in with an update on our one-to-one computing program. I think the last time that we left off with the podcast in September, my students were working on their grandparent project. I am happy to report that that project was an overwhelming success, and I even had some grandparents crying in my classroom on Grandparents Day.
Wow.
I will provide the link to the grandparents
I think that's
project
a good thing.
For you
yes.
in an email later on. One of the second quarter projects we worked on was an animal wiki project. In our animal wiki project, the task was for a group to create a wiki page on a vertebrae and invertebrae from the animal kingdom, and then they had to present their findings to the entire class. So they had to work together to research one animal, and then put that page together. So as they did that project, they filled out an animal wiki project data form. They used that data form then to produce and fulfill the requirements for the wiki project. And then when it was all said and done, the students had a wiki project and they were able to learn about other animals from their classmates. So that project just wrapped up, and I will also provide that link for you so that others can take a look at that. One of the funny stories that happened to us while we were working on the wiki project is, as I came into school one morning, our first and second grade teacher asked me if there was something wrong with the internet, and I said, well, I hadn't had a chance to log on yet. So it happened that Charter internet and phone and cable were all down that day. So about midway through the day, I met the principal in the hallway, and he said, how are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm doing just fine. Why? He goes, well, I was just wondering if everything was going okay in your classroom because the internet was down, and I know that you're operating everything on one-to-one. I told him that despite the internet being down, everything was fine. We still had our netbooks with all our documents. So the only ironic thing was that was the day we were going to start putting the information on the wiki. So we had to postpone that for a day. Moving on to what we're working on currently, one of the things that I have begun to experiment a little bit with in my classroom is what's called flipping your classroom.
And there's the tease for next time we have a chance to play Kurt's email. That is, I guess that is – or voicemail. That is a consideration, I suppose, when you're going digital and relying definitely on the internet. You have to have a plan B, and you have to be able to still keep things afloat even if you don't have that internet at your disposal. So good lesson learned. Always
maybe
plan,
we need
plan
a plan
for
B
worst.
For audio challenges with WellStick podcasting.
That's right.
We do have technology involved.
That's right. So far,
all
so
right.
good,
Finally,
though, for 200 and some
odd
episodes.
Links to share.
Yep.
From Randy Nepson, he shared a link to WLC's Google Education Summit, which is coming up in July at WLC. There's going to be a week-long training on Google Apps with a free Google Chromebook included mm-hmm. in the training session. You can earn 3 college credits, and registration is open as of January 6th through March 15th. The early bird discount rate is $1,850, and the standard rate from March 15th to May 31st is $1,950.
And we're
so
going to be hearing from Joe DeFore in the next couple of weeks on that summit, so we'll learn more about it in the coming weeks.
And then finally, Martin, you shared a link on Digo to 13 tips for increasing your company's Google rank.
Yeah, and I don't need to say a lot about this, but this is just one of those articles that is probably good to tuck away if you are a webmaster trying to figure out how best to get your website in front of more people, especially as they're doing searches. Just some common sense stuff like putting new content on the website regularly, et cetera, et cetera. But just a reminder that there are ways that you can increase your ranking on Google, and some of them are very simple. So take a look at the blog post. That, Sally, is episode 218. Next week, we're looking forward to talking about online Bible study, and we'll be interviewing Pastor Tom Cuck from where is he in Tennessee? Someplace in Tennessee. He is one of the guys behind an initiative that's actually going a little bit more national now to make digital Bible studies available and have a presenter. I believe President Mark Zarling from MLC is the next presenter who does a weekly or will do a weekly presentation of Bible study. And the concept is to gather congregations in their local locations and view the presentation, then ask questions via chat tool. So we will look forward to hearing Tom talk about that initiative, which has been very well received so far.
Excellent.
Let us close the show with the music of Corbin Creek. Psalm 46 is the name of the song from their album, Could It Be Me? We want to thank everybody for joining us, and we hope that you will come back and join the conversation next week. Bye-bye. Hello.
God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth be moved, though the mountains topple into the depths of the sea. Its waters rage and foam, though the mountains tremble at its tumult. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. God is in her midst, she shall not be overthrown. Nations in uproar, and the kingdoms fall, and the earth shall melt away. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Come now and look upon the works of the and over all the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold.